Behind me, I can sense Nine basically holding his breath. Five's good eye flicks briefly in our direction. He definitely heard us, but he can't see us. Maybe there's hope he'll just write it off as noise from the Moogs outside. I want another go at the renegade guard, too. One where he doesn't sucker punch me into unconsciousness before the fight even starts. But we have to pick our battles. Facing off against Five in an enclosed space, with a Mogadorian warship at our back, is definitely not the battle we want. We'll need to figure out another way to recover Eight's body. I pull at Marina's arm, the icy pinpricks in my hand now replaced by full-on numbness, trying to communicate to her just how terrible an idea charging in would be. She tugs against me for a moment, but then I start to feel her calm down, which I can tell because my hand starts to warm up. But as Marina slowly and quietly releases a deep breath, I see it mist in front of her, the air around her too cold. A cloud of breath from an invisible girl, floating in the bright lights of the hangar. Five sees it, his eye narrowing. He stands up from his chair and looks right at the spot where we're standing. "I didn't mean to do it," he says. Chapter 12. I clench Marina and Nine's hands, hoping that will be enough to keep them from saying anything back to Five and totally giving away our position. I'm just not ready to lose our one advantage, invisibility, just yet. Thankfully, they both manage to control themselves, Five's words hanging out there, unanswered. "I know you won't believe me," Five continues, "but no one was supposed to get killed." Five's beseeching gaze is still aimed right at us, so slowly, quietly, I begin leading the others to the side. We move just inches at a time, careful of each other, not making any noise. Gradually, we slip out from under Five's gaze, flanking him. Now he's staring at truly empty space, stupidly waiting for a response. With a grunt, Five turns away. It's like he was never talking to us at all. Instead, he starts speaking directly to Eight's body. "You shouldn't have done what you did, diving in front of Nine," Five lectures, his voice almost wistful. "It was heroic, I guess. I kinda admire you for it. But it wasn't worth it. The Mogadorians are going to win anyway, you know? A level-headed guy like you would have learned his place. You could have helped with the rebuilding and unification. Nine, though, he's too brain-dead to know when he's beat. He's no good to anyone." I feel muscles tense in Nine's arm, but for now he resists the urge to throw himself at Five. That's good. He's learning. Or maybe, like me, he's stunned this is happening at all. Five just rambling away like this, pretending we're not here. Five puts his hand gently on Eight's shoulder. The sleeve of his uniform rides up, and I notice the leather sheath strapped to his arm, the one that holds the needle-shaped spring-loaded dagger that he used to kill our friend. "He told me." Five's voice breaks a little as he continues addressing Eight. "He told me I'd have a chance to talk you guys into joining. No one would have to get hurt if you just accepted Mogadorian progress. He kept his word before. I mean, I'm living proof, right? When the charm broke, he could have killed me, but he didn't." Five must be talking about Cetricus Raw, about a deal he struck with the Mogadorian leader. He walks around the table, turning his back on us. Marina takes a step towards him, but I don't let her go any farther. I don't know why Five is talking so much, but he has to know we're here. I'm not sure if this is a trap, if he's baiting us or what is going on. But I want to listen. I didn't expect you to be so brainwashed, Five says, standing over Eight, his hunched back presenting a perfect target. Thinking about everything in black and white, heroes and villains. Five reaches down and lifts Eight's pendant, squeezing the jewel in his fist. His legacy, externa, he called it, where his skin takes on the quality of whatever he touches, kicks in. Five's skin briefly flashing the shimmering cobalt of Lorelite. After a moment, he lets the pendant go with a sigh, and his flesh returns to normal. But then, maybe I'm the brainwashed one, right? Isn't that what you guys said to me? Five lets loose a low laugh, then reaches up to carefully adjust the gauze over his destroyed eye. They fill your head with all this shit. The elders, the great book, all these rules about who we're supposed to be. But I don't care about any of it. I'm just trying to survive. I feel Nine's hand sweating in mine. He must be struggling to hold himself back from attacking. Marina, meanwhile, isn't radiating the furious cold she was moments ago, probably because the scene unfolding before us is so misguided and pathetic. If Five's speech, clearly for our benefit, has revealed anything, it's that he's pretty much lost his mind. Five brushes a speck of something gently from Eight's forehead, then shakes his head. Anyway, the point is, I'm sorry, Eight, Five says, that know-it-all tone still in his voice, but mixed with an undercurrent of sincerity. I know it doesn't mean anything. I'll be a coward, a traitor, a murderer, for the rest of my life. That won't change. But I want you to know that I wish things could have turned out differently. Behind us, someone clears his throat. All of us were so wrapped up in Five's unhinged monologue, Five included, that we didn't notice the Mogadorian officer enter. He eyes Five warily, his posture stiff and formal. Looking at him, standing there like a soldier ready to deliver a report, it occurs to me that this Mogadorian might actually take orders from Five. If that's the case, he seems way disgusted by it. We are finished loading the ship, the officer says. The Moog waits for Five to acknowledge him, but Five stays silent for a long, awkward moment. He stays hunched over Eight's body, breathing slowly. I tense up and wonder if his strange game is over, and if now he's thinking about sounding the alarm. The Mogadorian officer does a bad job of hiding how much Five's silence perturbs him. One of the hunting parties hasn't reported back, he continues, and the mechanics are having difficulties getting one of the scout vessels to work. Five sighs. That's fine, he says. We'll leave them behind. Yes, those were my orders, the officer replies, not so subtly asserting his power. Are you ready to leave? Five turns to the officer, a malicious twinkle in his remaining eye. Yeah. Let's get out of here. Five walks towards the hangar doors, his movements mockingly sluggish. We stand to the side, watching all this transpire, staying quiet. The officer arches an eyebrow, not stepping out of Five's way. Aren't you forgetting something? The officer asks Five when the two are nearly face to face. Five scratches his head. Huh? The body, the officer says, annoyed. Your instructions are to bring the Lorik's body and the pendant. Oh, that, Five replies and glances back at the metal table where Eight rests. The body's gone, Captain. The guard must have slipped in here and taken it. Only explanation. The Mogadorian captain doesn't know what to say. He makes a show of craning his neck, looking past Five to where Eight is still very much on the table, Then he studies Five's face, his eyes narrowed impatiently. "Is this some kind of game, Lorik?" the captain hisses. "Or are you blind in both eyes now? The guard is right there." Five ignores the insult and shakes his head at the captain, clicking his tongue.
"Happened on your watch, too," Five says. "You let them steal a war asset right from under your nose. That's basically treason, my man. You know what the punishment for that is."
The Mogadorian opens his mouth for another disbelieving protest. He's cut off by a scrape of metal, Five's blade popping out from beneath his sleeve. Without hesitation, he drives the point into the underside of the officer's jaw and straight up into his brain. Before he starts to disintegrate, there's a look of total surprise on the Moog's face. Five doesn't move as the Moog turns to ash. He disintegrates slower than the many other dying Moogs I've seen, and when it's finished, there are jagged bones poking out of his crumpled uniform. Five pushes his blade back into the mechanism on his forearm and kicks the officer's remains away from the doors. Then he carefully brushes himself off and straightens his coat. From where we're standing, Five is in profile, and the eye that's visible is the one covered by the gauze bandage. Because of that, it's not easy to get a read on his expression.
"Good luck," Five says,
then steps through the hangar doors, easing them closed behind him. No one says anything, or even moves, for about a minute. All of us a little worried that a squadron of Moogs will be storming in here at any second. Finally, Nine shakes off my grip, popping back into the visible world.
"Okay, what the holy hell was that about?" he exclaims. "Is that kid trying to buddy up now, or is he just totally Looney Tunes?"
"It doesn't matter," I reply. "We've got eight, that's what's important. We can deal with Five another time." "He's alone and lost," Marina says softly, letting go of my hand as well. She notices me rubbing some warmth back into it, the chilled feeling still lingering, and frowns.
"Sorry, Six. He brought it out of me."
I wave it off, not wanting to get into Marina's legacy control at the moment. I tiptoe to the hangar doors and edge them open just a crack. I'm just in time to see Five disappearing up the ramp and onto the warship, the last one aboard. Once he's inside, the ramp curls back into the warship's underbelly, and the huge ship begins to rise up, its engines purring with a softness that seems almost impossible for a vessel that size. Once it reaches a certain height, the warship starts to flicker, and I begin having trouble distinguishing its outline from the purple clouds. Hulking, virtually silent, and equipped with some kind of cloaking device, how are we supposed to fight something like that?
"You sound like you feel sorry for him," Nine says to Marina.
"I don't," she snaps at Nine, but I can hear some doubt creeping into Marina's voice, that tough exterior she's been putting on showing some faults.
"Did you see his eye?"
"I saw a hole in his head covered by a Band-Aid," Nine replies. "Dude has that and more coming to him."
"Do you think Eight would want that?" I ask, honestly wondering.
"He died trying to keep us from killing each other." The warship risen out of sight, I turn around to face the others. Nine chews his lip and stares at the floor, considering what I just said. Marina has taken a seat in Five's former chair at Eight's side. She tentatively touches the electrodes and waves her fingers through the energy field. When nothing happens, Marina gently brushes her fingers through his curly hair. Her eyes shine with fresh tears, but she holds them back.
"I knew I'd find you," she whispers. "I'm sorry I ever left you."
I walk over to join Marina at the table, gazing down at Eight. Maybe it's my imagination, but it seems like he has the faintest smile on his lips.
I wish I'd known you better, I say to 8, reaching out to place my hand lightly on his shoulder. I wish our lives had been different.
9 hesitates, but eventually joins us at the table, standing next to Marina. At first, he avoids looking directly at 8's body, his lips pursed, the muscles in his neck twitching like he's trying to lift something heavy.
He's ashamed, I realize.
It seems to take a great effort on his part, but after a moment, 9 manages to look at 8. Immediately, he reaches out to zip up the body bag a little more, enough so that 8's wound is hidden from view.
Oh, man, he says quietly. I'm sorry for...
9 shakes his head, running a hand through his hair.
I mean, thank you for saving my life. 5 was right. You probably shouldn't have. If I'd just shut my mouth, you'd probably still be... Shit. I'm sorry, 8. I'm so sorry.
9 takes a shuddering breath, obviously holding back tears. Marina puts her hand softly on his back and leans against him.
He would forgive you, she says softly, adding, I forgive you.
9 puts his arm around Marina and pulls her into a hug that's tight enough to make her squeak. He buries his face in her hair, hiding his tears.
My mind is, and has always been, racing.
Wondering about John, Sam, and the others. Worrying about how we're going to find our way back to them. If they're even still alive and uncaptured. But seeing Marina and 9 like this, coming together, starting to heal, it gives me hope.
We're a strong people.
We can get through anything. We need to get moving, I say gently, reluctant to end this moment, but knowing that I have to. 9 finally releases Marina, and I carefully zip up 8's body bag. 9 reaches down and, with an equal amount of care, lifts 8's body into his arms. Just as we turn towards the hangar doors, they rumble open.
The group of Mogadorians who were working on the scout ship.
I forgot all about them. They stand in the doorway, caught in the middle of pushing their broken ship into the hangar. They look about as surprised to see us as we are to see them. Before we can do anything, a mechanical grinding emanates from the ship. The front, or at least the side of the saucer aimed directly at us, opens up, a blaster turret clanking into view and whirring to life with an electric sizzle. There must be a Moog inside.
Get down! 9 shouts.
There's no cover in this empty hangar except the metal table, and it's way too late to go invisible. Marina flips over the table, 9 crouches with 8's body still in his arms, and I dive to the side, hoping that we're fast enough, as the turret opens fire.
Chapter 13. Does the name Grahish Sharma mean anything to you? Sarah asks. I think for a moment, trying to pluck the name out of my memory. Sounds kind of familiar. Why? I'm standing in the yard outside Adam's old house, Sarah's voice arriving long distance over the disposable cell phone. Beyond the empty basketball courts, the sun is just beginning to dip below the horizon. A large bird cuts across the orange sky, and I wonder if it's one of ours. We've set the Chimeri up as sentries all around the grounds of Ashwood Estates, with orders to find us if any intruders should appear. So far, it's been quiet. If I didn't know better, Akorts, the sun is just beginning to dip below the horizon. A large bird cuts across the orange sky, and I wonder if it's one of ours. We've set the Chimeri up as sentries all around the grounds of Ashwood Estates, with orders to find us if any intruders should appear. So far, it's been quiet. If I didn't know better, it'd seem like I was hanging out in a particularly quiet suburb, one where everyone's still at work. He's from India, Sarah explains.